Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Hey guys, welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And I am here today with somebody who has so many strings to his bow, an incredible performer, a creator, a lecturer, a teacher, a reviewer. Like, this guy's done it all and then some, and done it to such a high level. I am, of course, talking about the legend of card magic, the one and only Mr. Steve Faulkner. How are you, my friend?
I'm really good, thanks. Yeah, that's a very nice introduction, isn't it? thanks very much.
You have done so much. I mean, it's incredible. You know, we're filming this just as we're kind of coming out of lockdown and everything's opening up. And I said to you off camera, you're one of the busiest people through this whole last year, through 2020 and the early 2021. Well, a lot of entertainers were just kind of sitting down, twiddling their thumbs. You've become busier than ever before. I mean, the amount of content that you've been putting online, not just reviews, and we'll get to that obviously, but a whole bunch of other stuff as well, and motivational messages and helping people get through the last year. It's been amazing, Steve. It really has to see that you've been so on it for the last year.
Wow, that's interesting. It's interesting because I'm doing this kind of, well, like a lot of us are, in isolation. And I think a lot of the stuff all that stuff started kicking off before lockdown. That's the thing. I was kind of lucky, really, because I had all the gear of doing the reviews. I was working on different things. So when lockdown happened, I just had to speed that process up. But it was all stuff that was kind of so. I think, I did burn out a couple of times and go, right, slow down, you know, because I think the fear was going the other way and having loads of time, which again is a ridiculous concept. It's never going to happen, but but the idea of not having stuff to do was a worry. So I kind of went the other way and had to pull it back a little bit.
Well, you know what? You're infamous in the magic community, and I want to talk about everything that you've done and everything that you have continued to do. But just for the one or two people that are watching this that have been living under a rock and they don't know who Steve Faulkner is, I'd like to start at the very beginning and just kind of talk a little bit about who you are and how you got into magic and kind of how we got to where we are now, if that's okay. So I suppose the first question is, what's your origin story, Steve? How did you get into magic? Was it somebody buying you a magic set, or how did all that happen?
No, and I mean this generally, there's a lot to it. So, and a lot of it probably isn't very interesting. So do edit the hell out of this, which you're not going to want to hear. Because it's kind of a scattered story. So I did remember having magic sets, and I did remember watching Paul Daniels and people like that. But I remember connecting with the things like the Bunko booth and the smaller, which we now know as kind of close-up tricks, really. And when I saw that sort of thing, I was really intrigued with it. But all the other stuff didn't do it for me as a kid, really. It was fine. And when I got the magic sets, I did the usual thing of learning the thing with the coin and the box, because that was easy, and then trying to read the instructions of the little free ropes that you got and going, what? You know, and so never really got any traction with that. But the idea of it was quite nice. And so as a kid, I wasn't that connected with it. And it was more later on, when there's a few things. I was a juggler as a hobby, and I started taking that very seriously. And I went over to Australia as a kind of year out thing before I went to, ended up doing what would be a career-ish thing. And I went over to Australia for 5 months. I did the backpacking thing with my little juggling stuff, and went into a juggling shop in Manly in Australia. And the shop was called Juggling Magic and More. A guy called Dave, and I'd love to reconnect with him. I'd never really seen much close-up magic, and I was just juggling as they would all hang out at their shop, just sort of, juggling as, just as a social thing. And then I started seeing a bit of magic, and people, magicians would come in, and he had this gig in Taipei or something, and he said, do you want to run my shop for a few weeks while I'm away? And I was like, yeah. So I'd sit in the shop, and magicians would come in, and I'd play with all the props. And I remember the first couple of things I saw, one of them was a coin vanish. This guy did a coin vanish. I'd never seen a good coin vanish close up, and I just thought it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. It wasn't that it fooled me. It did, but it wasn't that. It was just the aesthetic of it. I just thought it was just beautiful. It was, there's something about that shiny object just going, had something, there was a quality to that that I'd never experienced. And then I saw, and then experienced the same with cards, like seeing something like a color change or just a double lift, or, you know, rub it on there and it, the card changed, just stuff like that. And I remember he did this, looking back on it, with quite a, someone did quite a bad kind of matching the cards kind of thing. And just the fact that all those cards were now kings, it was, I just got, so that got me into that idea and the learning of it. I didn't really see myself as being a performer. But then what happened is that I, like everybody when you're in Australia at that age, you know, 18, 19, you run out of money. And I was going into bars and saying, look, I'll show you a magic trick. If you like it, buy me a drink. If not, I'll just leave you alone. That was all I'd say. And I'd do, what the only two tricks I had was a Svengali deck, and I had a thumb tip and a hanky. And I'd learned how to make that vanish, and a fag. So obviously people smoking indoors then. So I'd get a cigarette and make it vanish. And 9 times out of 10, it was a different time then. So it was before the internet, basically. So people weren't watching stuff on YouTube, and people had never, a lot of people had never seen this, and they were just losing their over it, you know. That, and I don't know if this is not a sweary one, is it? Because,
if you want to, it's fine. It's not a problem.
All right, but yeah. So people are literally losing their shit over it. They were kind of just go, oh my god, where's the hanky gone? And buy me drinks, and then I'd make friends, and end up staying at someone's, give me a job in their shop for, and you know, this thing would just spiral. So I came back, stayed into it for a bit, and then kind of got back into the juggling. Long story short, went to start, became a street performer in Covent Garden, did a juggling comedy show, escapology, the usual. And then met Pete Wardell. Pete Wardell got me back into the idea of magic. I had a gig in South Africa when my show really wasn't very good. I shouldn't have been doing it, but a guy called Pete and Rich. We went over there. I met Jacques Lasseur over there. So it's Pete, Jacques Lasseur. Jacques Lasseur is the magician that stole, famous for stealing Nelson Mandela's watch. Great watch dealer. He's got a great watch stealing download, actually. And got back and met some other magicians that were doing stand-up magic, and just got back into it then, and came back with this real new hunger, really, to kind of learn the stuff. And then got Card College, worked through that cover to cover pretty much as I was street performing, got loads of time. You have a drink or go to the cinema, really, or, you know, you do 40 minutes a day and you're done. So I'd spend the rest of that time reading Card College or getting drunk, or both. And then, so you have to go back and reread. But then, and then just got really obsessed with that idea, and then realized that there was another thing as well, that when I was at corporate gigs, I would watch jugglers. I was a juggler, and I'd watch magicians, and I would see the responses and the connection magicians were getting with people compared to what I was doing with juggling. And don't get me wrong, but the juggling was kind of an aesthetic. You know, you walk into loads of people juggling, it looks great. But I wanted that connection. And I suppose the egotistical part of me, my ego, wanted that response. I wanted people to think it was amazing. You know, which is very different now, but at the time, at that age, it was like, wow, you know, imagine people saying, having that response to what I do. And that was very kind of intoxicating as well. So yeah, and that started the whole journey, really. So the whole street performing thing, and of course magic came into my street show then. So
we've got to the point where magic's now in your street show, and you've been performing, yeah, basically your whole life. I was speaking to Sean McCree a little while ago, who's a big fan, of course.
Oh, nice.
He said that I need to ask you about your cups and balls routine that you did on the streets, because it's absolutely unbelievable and the best cups and balls routine that he's ever seen.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm talking to Pete Wardell about this, because Pete, I mean, it's Pete's routine. You know, I'll be totally honest. On the street, I was not the most original person in the world. What I felt that I wanted to put into it, whatever I did, I used as a vehicle to improvise around. So I've always improvised a great deal, and it's not a very grand thing. It's not hard to do when you've got a really strong magic trick to fall back on. You know, you can try something, it doesn't work, boom, you know, there's the melon under the hat. So it's, you've got that lovely freedom with magic, and it's so sad when people don't use that, you know, to kind of, but anyway, so, you know, Pete's routine was, I was pretty much doing that routine. Well, it's the Vernon routine, and then and I was doing lines that Pete was doing, you know, with his blessings, because he never told me not to, and I was hanging out with him. So, and then my own stuff started coming into it, and then I got to a point where I thought, okay, I've got to really start this. But it kind of goes back. It's Gazzo, Jim Cellini before that, and of course Vernon. It is the Vernon routine with just one little bit cut out of the middle. So, but the origin, that was an interesting thing, because I got a cruise ship gig kind of before I was ready to go on stage. I was very nervous, and I didn't do the cuts in a show at that time. But I had them on me. I was learning them. Gazzo had lent me some really expensive cups that are now in a museum somewhere, but I had them for about 3 years. and I had them on me, and had the Vernon book, you know, the Book of Magic. And I thought, all right, I'm going to nail it. I've got 5 days away. I'm stuck in the ship. I'll nail it. And then I thought I was doing like a 10-minute show and a 20-minute show. And I got on and they said, no, we want a 50-minute and a 20. I didn't have 50 minutes. So I did this show on day two where I did my 20 minutes. And then just, I had everything in there. I mean, it's like every juggling prop I had got in that show. It wasn't a very good show. But then I had 3-4 days to find something else. So I just caned at Cups and Balls routine in my cabin. And then, which isn't a euphemism. And then I went out and never performed it, and had to perform it in front of like 500 people on a cruise ship with cameras on my hands. And I did it badly. You know, those final loads were bad. I remember I had a tie on, and the tie got stuck in the cup when I was putting the final load in, and I had to kind of pull it. And what I learned was that I did that those 4 oranges went in. I didn't do the melon at the time. And every time one of those oranges went in, I kind of went, there's no way I got away with that. I mean, I might as well have just gone look over there, bang. And the response when those oranges came out after that really bad, you know, everybody does a routine for the first time, it's not great. You know, it's always going to be a bit shonky, a bit all over the place. And the response was amazing. And that really taught me what you can get away with. You know, you kind of, if the routine's strong enough, the misdirection's built into the routine, and your confidence, which I'd learned on the street, you know, I'd learned to kind of fake it until I make it, you can get away. And that was a big learning for me. It was like, oh, right, that's why misdirection is what it is, you know. I've definitely got Pete Wardell to thank for that routine, because it's kind of, you know, I'd like to think there's more of me in it now.
Yeah.
But it's you know, it's all him, really. And then Gazzo Cellini.
Here's a question for you. There's a lot of people these days that gloss over learning the Cups and Balls because they think, well, I'm never going to be in an environment to perform it in. A lot of close-up workers, tabletop mix and mingle magicians, they can't see a reason to learn the Cups and Balls. But all the old timers used to say, learning the Cups and Balls will make you a better magician.
I totally agree.
The Cups and Balls. Would you say that every magician who wants to study sleight of hand should learn it, regardless of whether they can see a place in their act for it or not?
I think so, because it's all in there, isn't it? Like every magic trick is in there, really. You know, the vanishes, appearances, the transformations, you know, it's all there. And I think that all the sleights are there, and they are transferable. It is one of those routines that is transferable. Some magic routines aren't, but it's like if you learn loads of card stuff, that will be transferable to coin stuff as well. The mindset with learning it, the remembering the routine, like I said, what you learn about how misdirection works, you know, when you worry less about those final loads. It's terrifying putting an orange in a cup a foot away from someone when you're doing close up. And I would also say it's a really strong thing to do in close up. It's, you know, and it's great for, you know, if you ever do those gigs where there's like 7 tables and you're done and they want another half hour because you realized, you know, you've mistimed it, or maybe there's 4 tables and you're there for 2 hours. To then go round again and do that routine, you can get 10 minutes out of it. And what people don't realize is that those final loads are easier when there's someone sitting there because they're all looking there. So you've got this, it's kind of like the bottle through table, you know, you think, oh God, there's people either side of me. But actually, I really think it's people, the response for that, again, that fruit coming out of the cups, I've never failed to get a pretty much the strongest response you can get from a magic trick from those. There's something delightful about that people really do. They laugh, you know, you get that laugh when people are so stunned at something, you know, when it's a lemon, and it's just great. So I'd totally recommend it, yeah.
Fantastic. And before we move on from you working on the streets or moving on with the rest of the story, I'm getting a lot of questions on the channel at the moment wanting to give advice on working on the streets. As somebody who's been there and done it for a long time, have you got any advice on kind of becoming a, say someone out there is a close-up magician, they want to do street magic. What's the best way for them to get into that? Is it just a case of go out and do it, or?
Yeah, well, it depends. There's two sort of branches of it, and I think that there's a bit of confusion sometimes. There's the circle shows, which is what I did, which is you stop, you do a 40-minute show, people pay at the end of the show. So there's a whole thing you've got to learn, which is about rapport and psychology. And if I knew then what I know now, it would have been a lot quicker for me. You know, I spent 5 years really struggling on the street. And a lot of that was about mindset and ego and worrying that people watch me and all that kind of stuff. But it was only when I went to Australia that it came together and I kind of relaxed. But the, all that stuff is about rapport. You've got to keep an audience for 40 minutes because they're not paying till the end. So there's a lot in there. Whereas if you're going up to people in the street, as you see on the, you know, the classic sort of YouTube thing of people call street magic, and it's fine and it's great. But if you're doing it for tips or you're doing it for video or whatever, you've got to look at what your goal is. But I would say it's the same kind of thing of approaching people on the street one-on-one or two-on-one or small groups is kind of harder in a way because there's no context there. You're just going up to people. And actually having a camera adds a bit of context and people kind of get it. They go, oh, you're filming a trick. But I think that it's still the same deal as you've got to have that rapport. You've got, if you're going to go up to people, the same as if you do a close-up gig, they've got to not feel threatened by you. They've got to... You've got to be a nice person. And I don't mean just nice, whatever that means to you, but it's, and I think that a lot of that is about authenticity. I think it's about, if people can feel that your intention is good, that it's not just, you're just exploiting them to get a bit of footage or, you know, that you're really grateful. Can I do things? So it all depends on what that means. I think, you know, the idea of street magic is, you know, when people say street magic, you look at it and go, that's not really street magic. That's you filming a trick on the street. That's not street performing. What I mean is it's street magic, I suppose. But any trick, I think, can be street magic in that environment. But I would say you need to work on, it's all rapport and connection. That's what will win the day, you know, on the street or anywhere, which is the same, in, you know, as you know, in close-up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you're in a situation where you've been working the streets, you've been studying card college, you've learned it inside out and back to front. Where did you go from there? Was there a period of time where you said, right, I'm going to transition away from the streets, I'm now going to move on to this? Because I know you as a corporate performer. Where did that come into sort of the frame? Was it straight after working the streets? What made you decide to kind of move on with different
environments? Yeah. Well, I've been doing the street for a long time. I always say 10 years, but it was longer than that. But 10 years, I think, is that being... every day, you know, nothing else. And then I was doing the odd gig as street performers would do, and I had a bit of an agent that got me the odd thing, you know, as agents, you know, it wasn't like a sole agent, it was, he had like 300 magicians on him. So, you know, get the odd thing. But then it was moving to Sheffield, really. I moved up north, got married, had kids, and kind of was traveling down to Covent Garden to work. And then if you travel all the way to Covent, it rains for 2 days, you don't earn anything. So it became a bit risky. And then I thought, right, I've got to do gigs. I've got to treat this as a business now. And I didn't have a clue, you know. And I met a local guy that ran leadership courses, management, leadership and management courses, ILM level 5. And I found out he was a magician hobbyist and he had this other life as a business trainer. And I said, well, I don't know anything about business. Why don't we do a skill swap? I'll teach you magic. You teach me how to speak to people in business, you know, the whole thing. And he said, great, yeah, and I'll put you on my course as well. So I went on this 10-day leadership course and it completely changed my life. And you say leadership course, it was a personal development course, which is what leadership is really. You know, it was rapport, it was mindset, it was productivity and you know, even a bit of mindfulness, you know, all that kind of stuff that really shifted my paradigm of the way I was thinking of myself, you know, and got rid of a lot of negative self-talk and ideas I had about myself and my capabilities. And, you know, I had this thing that I could never be a business person because I was a busker, you know, but those two things don't go together, you know. And then you realize you've been a business person for the last 10 years because you've been on the street selling a show and collecting money at the end of it and pitching, you know, that's kind of what you're doing. So that started that thing. And I had a big goal just to get gigs and not have to, you know, go to London and do the street. And I did York for a bit, which is a closer street pitch. But then built the close-up work from there.
Okay. And obviously then you became really well known in the corporate market, doing a lot of corporate shows and kind of going out there. Any advice for magicians or that want to, basically I get so many people on the channel that are new into magic and they want to make a living out of magic, become a professional close-up magician. That's their kind of their ultimate goal. Any advice on going out and actually becoming a close-up magician and coming, going out and getting gigs, you know, is there any advice you can offer?
Yeah, I think for me, if I look at what stopped me and stifled me, because I could always have been busier. I've never one of those magicians that were going out 3-4 times a week. And actually, I think probably subconsciously, it's because I didn't want to. But, you know, I never felt like I got as busy as I wanted to. But I think part of it, and looking back, I probably was doing all right. But I think that the fear of failure was a big thing for me for a lot of time, you know, putting myself in, and it's weird to say that because I did fail for years and got over that, you know, you do when you do this work. But I think sometimes I hid behind marketing when I realized I just had to go and do it. And I did in the end, but it took me a while to get there, you know. And I think the big advice is the best marketing you can do, and I know everybody says it and it's kind of a boring answer, the best marketing you do with people seeing your stuff. It's like, you know, that's why people have showcases. You're not going to book an act if you've not seen the act. I won't book an act for my show if I ain't seen it. You know, so that's what, I don't care what you're marketing. I don't care how well your video's edited. We all know now that you can edit something together, make it look amazing. I want to know how that audience connects with you and how your show is in that context. And someone said to me once, I had this gig, this lovely gig in Barbados, and it wasn't many of them, so I'm not sort of, I'm not geographical name dropping really, but it was really amazing. And I was a bit out of my depth. I thought, am I going to pull this off? I was on stage before a guy called Jim Tavaray, who was a quite a famous comic back in the day. And I was like, am I going to pull this off? And I said to the guy who booked me, I said, you've seen my show. Is this going to work? And he said, look, if it doesn't, it's my fault. He said, I booked you and I've seen your show. So it's not your fault, is it? And I was like, exactly. So you book what you see. So if you want to get gigs, you have to get out there and do the really uncomfortable thing of going, I don't know if I'm ready, because you'll never feel ready. You're never going to stroll out there and go, I've nailed it. And you always have that imposter syndrome. But I think it's just start doing them, learn from your mistakes, understand that those first ones are going to be a little bit all over the place. So don't charge the world for them. And then people start noticing you the more you do it. And it is uncomfortable to do that, because there's nowhere to hide. You know, you can't hide behind the copy or the blurb or the testimonials. It's that your mates have written, you know. So I would say you just got to do it, feel that discomfort and understand that's part of the process.
Brilliant advice. And let me ask you, you mentioned there nerves. Any advice on dealing with nerves? Because it's the thing that cripples so many magicians, you know, when they first go out, they've sat there for hours, days, weeks, months, practicing sleights. They've got them absolutely nailed. And the first time they go out to a real gig and they show people, the hands are shaking and they're sweating and they're nervous. Nerves is a real issue in any industry. But in magic, it's so noticeable if you are nervous. It's something very difficult to cover.
Well, I mean, I've thought about this a lot. And you think of what we do. It's a weird thing, because you're presenting something. When you're a magician and people know you are, so when you're doing a gig, they'll think, oh, he's a magician, you know. So you're not a normal person. You're in that role. So they expect to be amazed. And what you're saying to them, non-verbally, is I'm just about to amaze you with something. And that's a really vulnerable place to be, because you might not, right? That's the thing that goes for our head. It's kind of like if you're on stage, go, right, that's my last trick. And go, God, there's a lot riding on this. Right? So it's understanding that feeling is completely normal. You are in a really vulnerable place. And I think it's normalizing it, making friends with it a little bit, really, and kind of going, okay, this is part of the process. The more I do this, the less this will happen, but it'll always be there. And again, it goes back to what I was saying a little bit, I think. If you get nervous and it kind of affects your performance a bit, I think people sometimes, when they look at the practice process, they always think of practice, you know, when you visualize practicing a trick in your head, you visualize yourself at home practicing it. And I think that they think that bit ends when they go and perform it. It kind of goes practice at home, performance out there. And actually it doesn't. It goes practice at home, practice on stage, practice in front of people, practice for ages. And then at some point down the line, you may get to a point of going, I think this is kind of working now. that's fine. And I think, again, it's just an awareness of that is that's the real situation. And I don't care who you are. I don't care whether you're Johnny Thompson, whether you know, everybody had to do their time of getting out there and going, that was a bit weird. But, you know, and it, you know, my first stand-up show, I did stand-up for a bit. I wasn't very good at it, but the first time I did it, I did really well. And I thought, I've nailed this, got really arrogant. Second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, I died on my ass. And that was just luck because I managed to, there was an improvisational situation arose when I walked on stage and I just used that. But actually when I had material, and that really put me off stand-up and I kind of gave up and kind of went back to it. But, and I think it's understanding that those nerves are not, there's no magic bullet. Everybody wants the answer for nerves. What's going to make my hand stop shaking? The only thing is doing it 100 times, you know. You know what happens with a trick where you kind of go, oh, that I just got completely lost in the middle of that. You know, it's kind of, I did it with that. What's that trick? Bubble thought. You know, the vanishing. I did it on Zoom a couple of times, and both times I got halfway through it and just went, I'm really confused. I just kind of went, I don't know where I am, and I've got a big crib sheet. All right. And it's good, and that's fine. I've been doing it for a long time, but if you've never performed and you're out for the first time and that happens, you come away thinking, oh my God, you know. And I think that nerves, if you overcome by them, just go with it for a bit and do your understand that the work that you do up to that point is done. Do the work, do the practice. And when you're out there, you can't do much else. So try and enjoy it. Just really try and be in the moment, not think of how it's going to go. That's the big thing. It's that thing of future pacing your thoughts. How's it going to go? It might go wrong. Try and learn to cut those thoughts off and really be in where you are at that moment. And that's really what happens after time. You just start enjoying it and just have faith that it's going to work out.
That's fantastic. That's brilliant advice. Now, obviously, we've talked about you as a performer and how successful you've been and you continue to be. There's two things that you're known for in the magic community outside of performing, which is your review show and also your card course. Now, what came first? Was it the card course or was it the review show? Of course, whichever one you say, I want to talk about that first.
Yeah, cool. So the card course was the first. That was in 2013. And that was around, So that's where when I made it. Nice. And I made it as a one-off thing of people pay 35 quid, they get 100 odd videos or whatever. And it was, you know, how to hold the card starting off there. And it had all the moves that I'd learned to that point, which, you know, were heavily inspired by obviously Card College, because it was that thing of loads of moves. And I didn't have many tricks on it. It was, the point was that just if you like me and you just like the idea of learning loads of moves, because then it's super easy to learn a trick, right? Because you already know loads of forces. And so here's the thing. And I didn't really think out the business model, because it did really well for about 3 weeks and everybody had it. So nobody had, there's no kind of monthly fee. So it was done. And that was fine. And then I had all these grand plans for it. And then I went through a divorce, which I found really, really difficult. I'd struggled for a couple of years and had just kind of relearned to be with my own on the kids and had share care with the kids. So time was an issue and trying to recalibrate myself into that life. Was a big transition. So the card course just sort of sat and rotted, really. I mean, I didn't build anything. It was just there. I didn't connect with it, but people had paid a one-off fee fine anyway. So it was a good job, really. I hadn't had a monthly thing set up. And then people would now and then go, oh, yeah, I've got your card course. I really love it. And I'd kind of forgotten about it, really, as a thing. You know, when you don't go back to something for a long time, you start losing faith in how good it might be. And then when people are saying it, you go, well, maybe there is something in it. And I went back and watched some of the videos and I thought they're really, because they were nicely shot. I got them, I shoot myself now because figuratively, but it was shot professionally, and I thought they still stand up, they're good. So I kind of thought I'd relaunch it, and I had this kind of 5-year plan. I thought, right, I'll relaunch it, make it a monthly fee, so it would have new content on there every month. See how that goes. And I'll chip away at that, and I put it on a new platform, and so it was easier to create the new uploads. And then that started doing okay, and you know, Zoom sessions, and then lockdown, COVID happened, and that 5-year plan very quickly became a, oh right, okay, so out of all the things I can still do, that's the one that I can still do, really. And because I can't do gigs. You know, I was one of the early people that said, I'm not doing Zoom magic. And now I will, and I do. But at the beginning, I didn't want to go there. And the review thing had started happening a bit before that as a way to... I went through this kind of... Oh, God, it's a long story. I won't bore you with it now, but you can edit.
Go ahead, bore away.
Well, I went for this thing which I call my wilderness years, where I got really disillusioned by the magic community, and I just kind of went, I'm done. So I went to a Blackpool, and it was just all... Every lecture was a sales pitch, and I felt unclean, you know. It was like nobody was teaching me anything. There was no passion. This was all in my head. Of course, there were loads of people. It was just, I was this bad luck that I'd seen a few things. And I probably wasn't in a great place anyway. So I kind of went out of magic for a bit, other than gigs. And I had a snowballing accident and I was in a very ropey hospital. There's a YouTube video of that. I monitored the whole thing and made a video about it. A few years ago, but I broke four ribs, I think, in my shoulder, and they were going to operate, and the doctor was there with his coffee and his fag looking at it, going, are we going to... I mean, it was just, the whole thing was hideous. And I was in a really, again, very vulnerable place, and Rich McDougall, Mike Vincent, a couple of people messaged me, and people really, you know, Richard Kaufman sent me a lovely message just saying, oh, if I could, I'd fly out there and get you, and I didn't know him, you know, and I just thought, this is a really nice community, isn't it? I've been really down on this. And I had Daryl's book, one of the Daryl books on me, and I just kind of started reading that because I had this idea that I might read it on the plane. And I just reconnected with the idea of learning for the sake of learning, not just for gigs. And it really helped me, the idea of doing it. But what was the question, Craig, originally?
We were just talking about the card magic course.
But
before we carry on with that, I just want to pick up on one point that you said there, which is... learning for the sake of it. I think that a lot of professional magicians, when they turn professional, they only learn something if they think they can put it into a gig.
Yeah.
And they forget that this was probably at one point a hobby, and that and one thing that I've always done, you know, I perform a lot on the channel, as you know, and people ask me, how can I do so many videos? It's course for me, even though it's a profession, it's a hobby. I just love learning tricks and moves, and I think if you don't do that and you don't remember that it's a hobby, you can get yourself into a situation where you almost resent magic. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's exactly what happened, and that, you know, it does bring it back to the card magic course, really, because what I decided at that point was that I remembered, I reconnected with why I enjoy it. It's just getting into flow and doing it, and then I thought, well, you know, that is something that my original thing with the card magic course is just for that knowledge saturation. Here's loads of moves you can learn. It's just to celebrate the sort of geekiness of it in a way, and kind of the learning for the sake of learning. And it was just so, and you know, and you wonder why we do anything. It's basically to make us happy. And I thought, this is making me happy. So what else do you want? And so I came back from that accident, you know, with this new idea that this was a lovely community, that I'd been a bit down on it. I'd been a bit disillusioned, wrongly. And started building that community again. And the card magic course, I decided to put a community element to that. And it's just a really lovely place. You know, we have weekly Zoom sessions, which again, they were every few weeks, I think. I can't remember what they were at the beginning, but now they're every week and will continue to be. You know, it's a lovely community. People come and their stuff they're working on, it doesn't have to be brilliant, and people give really supportive feedback. So that was born at that moment, really, where I kind of realized and now know what a lovely community this is, and how arrogant was I to put all those judgments on it, you know, at that time, where all that was just about my own projections, because I was in a bad place because my wife left me, which is fine, you know, it's not a sim, it's fine, you know, but it's interesting to know what that, when you, even if you look at the forums and you see the bitterness of some people of, you know, how unhappy they are at other magicians for doing a thing that they didn't like. And you go, that's just about your own pain. You know, there's something going on there. And but anyway, getting a bit deep. So the card magic course became my sort of passion project, really. And now it's kind of like, okay, this would be a great thing to do forever if I can one day.
So you upload content onto there every month.
Yeah.
Regular live sessions.
Yeah, and they're uploaded as well. So that's nice. Yeah.
That's great. And there's obviously a bunch of content on there already.
Yeah.
Where can people go to find out more about the course, and how much is it?
So it's on cardmagiccourse.com, and we do non-card magic as well now. It's a bit like Car Phone Warehouse, you know what I mean? They don't just do car phones. It's cardmagiccourse.com, and I've just changed the pricing structure. It's $9.99, you get everything, all the uploads. So there's 4 live sessions get uploaded, and if people request stuff. And then I'm going to change the price structure so you pay a little bit more every month if you want direct contact with me. Like if you're having trouble with a move, I'll make you a video, send it back to you. But so it becomes like a more of a one-to-one coaching, which I do at the moment, but I can't maintain that if it gets too busy. I'd rather limit those numbers and kind of do it properly than have to rush stuff. So it's but nine a month you get, that's going to be fine for nearly everybody.
Fantastic. That's absolutely great. So as somebody who runs cardmagiccourse.com, let me ask you one question. What's the best card trick of all time?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? I still think, again, remembering, and I still try and watch card tricks with a layman's head on me. And I really love the, if you think about it, when someone does a trick and they go, is that your card? No. And then they do a top change or whatever and go, that's it, right? If the spectator genuinely doesn't see that top change, what they've experienced is you going, is that your card? No. Well, it is now, you know, which is an absolute miracle. Right, so it doesn't, I mean, that has a purity to it, and I remember seeing something like that and just the simplicity of the plot. I didn't have to think about what was going on, and I just thought it had that sort of lovely, oh, that wonder. So I think something that has a like that, that's a kind of, you know, double lift, top chain, you know, whatever it is probably still one of my favorite things to do, or anywhere, any trick like matching the cards where, you know, you get 3 cards that are wrong and then you turn them all over and then you get that lovely reveal. I think those are my favorite tricks, really. And the other ones are favorites to do and learn and practice are very different. I always bang on about Roger Smith's Maxi Twist. But any of those kind of twist in the aces tricks, packet tricks, I really, again, because I remember very, very clearly being a layperson and watching that and loving it. And all this stuff about, oh, I only count tricks, never work, and nobody, it's like, well, no, if it looks like you're doing a really deliberate, it's different. But if you just look like you're putting those cards in the other hand and one's turned over and then the other one has, and then you've got that kicker. Vinny Sagu sent me a couple of tricks, and I opened one the other day, and I can't remember what it's called. It was lovely. And he is an aces trick. It was like a twist in the aces trick with blank cards. And again, I don't try and work out the dentist, watch it. And it was just a really love. I think there's a really lovely purity to those tricks as well. Blank cards, and then they're all aces. And I think, I love personally those sort of things. I love a little packet trick, you know, with all the John Bannon stuff and all that.
I'm a huge John Bannon fan. I really am. I think stuff is brilliant.
It's great. Yeah. And I think, you know, someone naming a 4 of a kind and finding that, you know, revealing a 4 of a kind, you know, either firing out the deck or cutting to them is great as well. I think I do a lot of that. It's simple to follow, isn't it?
And it's the sort of thing that laymen really go crazy over.
Yeah.
That they understand the impossibility of being able to, like, produce a name 4 of a kind.
Yeah, yeah. And in their heads as well, even if they think, well, he done that through sleight of hand, it's not magic, that's kind of adds to it. It's like the cups and balls. They know you've put the fruit in there, right? They know that hasn't magically appeared. And that's what gets the applause. That's why magic is, people like magic. It's not because they believe it's real magic. Because something that Gustav Kuhn said in his book, he said, if people genuinely believed it was magic, they wouldn't be impressed because they would believe in magic. They just go, well, it's magic because I believe in it. They're impressed because they don't. So when we look at those, what lay people really respond to, it's like, how did he do that? Because we know he did somehow, or she did.
And what's your opinion on self-working card magic versus sleight of hand? Like, I know people who go out there and they don't know sleight of hand with cards, and they've made a career for themselves just doing a million different self-working tricks. What's your opinion on that? I'd love to know what you think.
Well, I'll tell you what my opinion is. My opinion is I like them, but I'm rubbish at them because I find them harder than sleight of hand tricks because there's more to remember, right? It's sleight of mind. I can't remember stuff. I have to crib, like, that I've got a dupe card on the bottom and what card that is. So I've doing this. There's a whole, on the card magic course, there's loads of courses that you get. So you get a course on forces. And I'm building at the moment, which is a huge undertaking, a course on the Royal Road to Card Magic. And what happens is you get it as part of the card course, or you can buy it on its own, but every couple of months I add another chapter. So it's a long process and everything in it. And I did the chapter recently with the key card, right? So, and I learned these tricks for years. I haven't looked at them for years. You know, and I did the trick called the three piles in the Royal Road to Card Magic, right? And I can't get people in because of lockdown to, so, but the next door, one of the girls that works next door was in. I said, can I just film this with you? I don't have to get near you. And we sort of see, we're kind of a bubble really, because we're both working in the same building. So I demonstrated this thing, three piles. And it's a key, just a key card thing, right? And she has seen, I've filmed stuff in there, everything I've reviewed. She's seen like CubeSmith, you know, all these tricks that are complete miracles, like mix the card up, cube up, I'm not looking at it, I'm going to solve it. You know, that's proper miracles. I do this self-working trick to her and she, again, totally loses her shit. She's like, that's amazing. She was like, that's one of the best things I've seen you do. And it was, you just kind of go, right, well, yeah. So if you're only looking for the response, then you might as well go that route. The sleight of hand is a passion, and it's something I think that people can feel. It's, they know that they, it's this kind of balance between they know something's going on, but the fact they can't even perceive it is amazing. So, and again, you can demonstrate a little bit of skill when you do color changes and things like that. And so it's, so I think self-working stuff is definitely equally as strong. It's different and it requires a different skill, but I don't think it's easier. It may take less time to learn, but to actually get most selfing tricks to a point where they're entertaining, you're getting rapport, they work, is the skill that takes the time. So no, I love a self-working trick, and I'm never going to start a show with something that is, you know, I want a nice easy ride of it in that first 10 minutes. So mm-hmm. Yeah,
wonderful. Now we got to talk about the review show, because you are considered one of the top reviewers of Magic on YouTube. Like, you just are. Like, everybody I speak to, they all.
I don't see any of this. I don't.
Honestly, I speak to a lot of people. When I first started my review show, people were saying, "Oh, well, the gold standard in the UK is Steve Faulkner. Steve Faulkner or the Wizard Pro Review. Those are the two." And a lot of people listen to everything that you say, and they base their buying decisions in part on your advice, which is a big responsibility. Yeah. So where did the review show come from? And yeah, I suppose that's the first question. What made you decide to be a Magic reviewer on YouTube?
I think it was definitely a few things. One of them was I didn't want to go back into that place I was where I got out of Magic, and it would kind of give me an accountability. Because I wasn't in the community, and even now, there's only a few conventions I went to because I've got the kids so much, and I have them. They're getting a bit older now, so it's going to get easier. But it's very hard to go to any kind of lectures or anything like that. And I wanted to feel connected to a community, and the Magic one, like I said, I realized how nice that was, and it was a way to do that. It was a way, I suppose, to be in it, and be relevant. We all want a bit of relevance. So how can I do something that I feel has value? I'm not really one of those people that performs a lot for magicians. Maybe I will one day, maybe that'll be a thing, but I didn't do many lectures. I've done a few now, online a couple. And it's somewhere that I felt quite comfortable. I'd done a lot of video stuff on Facebook and things like that. So I thought, and it just kind of, the perfect storm of that. Noel Qualtra had just come out of a trick and I bought it. I didn't get sent to me. I bought it and he said, do you want to review it? And I said, well, yeah, I'll try it out. So that kind of, it just the timing thing. I thought, well, I had a smaller camera than this, and I had the office. I just got an external office. I had somewhere to set stuff up, you know, the thing of having to set up for an hour and a half every time you do something so you don't do it. So yeah, it was just that. And I wanted to test myself. And there was a thing, of course, how can I create awareness of my course by doing something that is in line with my values and something that actually I want to do, rather than just say to people, here's my course, buy it. You know, it's kind of a win-win. It's something I enjoy, something I want to do, something that gives me something that hopefully will be of service to others, which is a big thing for me. You know, it's and market the course as well. So it was an experiment that kind of people, and when I first did the first one, which is like an 18-minute review, I think, on Bliss, the feedback was really positive, and I didn't have a clue. I was beating myself up going, God, isn't that awful? And people were like, no, it's really good. And then, so that gave me a kind of motivation, momentum to keep going.
That's fantastic. And you have found a completely unique style that's different to everyone else out there, which is just great. I mean, do you want to talk to me? I mean, a lot of people think that review shows are an easy thing to put together. I mean, they think it's, you know, I know from what I do, a lot of people that are watching this think, oh, you can put a review show together very, very easily. I think that, you know, we need to address the fact that it's very hard work.
Yeah.
Very, very hard work.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really hard. Really hard work. And there are things. It's that thing: be careful what you wish for. Because part of it, you know, I love getting magic stuff. I love magic books, right? So, the idea of getting free stuff. It, don't get me wrong, I wouldn't, because it's not free really. Because you know, you work out your daily rate. If you go, well, I've just spent a day reviewing. I've spent 2 weeks learning the thing. Which is some tricks. It does take that long. There might be 2 weeks learning the thing. Then I've got to actually perform it for someone, even if I don't get the footage, to get understand what that feels like, and then think about that. It's loads of work, and there has been times where I've literally been losing sleep. I've got a stack of stuff to review. I've said yes to too many people, and I really don't want to let them down. There's this feeling of letting people down, and it does mean a lot to me. You know, someone sends me their stuff, and I know for some people, you know, people say, well, it's not much to them, is it? But it's still their stuff, you know? For a lot of people, that means a lot. I remember when I made this DVD, whenever it was, 12 years ago, when I sent someone that, I was worried, you know, it was, well, what if they don't like? And so I think that there's a kind of respect there and I think about this, funny enough, on my run this morning, I was thinking about that thing of, because I spoke to you before we started. What you do when you say you're going to do something for someone, you open the loop, right? You open something and there's no closure until you do that thing. All right. So even if they're not thinking about it, that's irrelevant. It's in my head. And our brains like closure. We like to. So if you open too many of those loops, you have this kind of feeling of unease, really. I think, well, I do. If I don't, until I've completed, it's like when someone lends you money or, you know, you don't. So, and there've been times where I've kind of had too many of those loops open and I start going, when am I going to do all this stuff? And that's the big thing, because it does takes me on. Well, it takes me about a day to shoot, edit, do the thumbnail, and shoot the review and all that. Probably about a day, sometimes more, sometimes a bit less. But all the lead up to it is the time consumption, and it is a huge amount of work. And the only way you can keep doing it is to really believe that what you're doing has value, either to yourself or to someone else. And I think that's the drive it. And you know, there's lots of research saying that nobody really is run by money. People are run by their values, so, or motivated by their values. So if it's in line with your values, that's the thing. You know, like, yeah, I think we talked about earlier that you sometimes you go, I'm up till, like you said, 2 o'clock in the morning editing. Why am I doing, you know? And I've been paid a lot of money for gigs that I haven't put as much effort into, because they're just not, you know, it's not something I really want to do. So it's, and it does get to a point I sometimes think, can I maintain this, you know, and make it a business, which is why the business side of it is quite important, that Car Magic course. If that doesn't get enough subscribers and I'm not quite there yet with it kind of being able to maintain me, at some point I'm going to have a look and go, okay, well, I think it will. But I think, yeah, I mean, it's a long drawn out answer to your, but people think it's just going to be getting a trick and talking about it. But you do have to start thinking about more. But it's like performing. You can't do it if you don't love it. You know, people will smell it. And people will, if you're on stage, just dialing it in.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, that's the thing that keeps us going, isn't it?
Absolutely, 100%. And you know what? People say to me, oh, but now you're on YouTube and you've monetized your videos. You're going to make a fortune from YouTube monetization. Really? Are you?
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah. Really, I'll be honest. Our channels are always going to be niche. They might get up there. You look at Magic Orthodoxy, he's got a lot of views, but you look at how long he's been doing it, you know, and he started where there wasn't many, but now everybody's going, I'm going to do a review show. It'll be interesting after lockdown, actually, to see if a lot of them are still going, myself included, which I think I will be. But, yeah, it's the money, you don't get anything from that. That's like, I don't even look at it. And I think there's 800 quid in there, and that's 3 years. So work that out.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, you're not going to get rich from YouTube, but you know, it is a labor of love, absolutely.
Yeah.
What's your opinion, Steve? And I've been very outspoken about this subject, so I'm probably biased in many, many ways. But what's your opinion on the quality of magic products that are coming out these days as somebody who sees a lot of magic? Because back in the day, when I first got into magic, there was hardly any magic trick. Like L&L bought one DVD set out probably every
year.
You had maybe something from A1 Multimedia.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to Peter Nardi about this. I remember when a packet trick came out. I remember when Twisted Sisters came out. It was advertised in all the magazines for 6 months.
Yeah.
It was like Twisted every month for 6 months. And
yeah. Save
Strangers Gallery and stuff like that. Like when a marketing trick came out, that was not an uncommon thing. These days, I refresh Murphy's, Penguin, all the various different dealers looking at what's new for deciding what to review. There's probably, if you count downloads, 50 or 60 products coming out every single day. It's impossible to review everything. And a lot of the standards have kind of slipped a little bit. What, as somebody who's been doing reviews a lot longer than me and has seen a lot of magic, what's your opinion on the quality of...
Yeah, it's funny because I still feel fairly new because I suppose I've been out of the game a bit. So I still feel like I'm a little bit out of touch with a lot of stuff, which I always will be. Funnily enough, someone said to me, have you seen this before? And I was like, no, I haven't seen it. Like, what? Everybody's talking about it. I'm like, no, I'm too busy reviewing stuff. So it's this weird kind of paradox of, you know, I'll be reviewing stuff, but I don't see a huge amount of things. And so I think there was always... You know, we always remember the going into Davenport's whatever and coming home and the disappointment of opening an envelope and it had like I think it's no quarter set, it was a bit of fishing line and a safety pin, you know, something like that. But you never paid that much for that. And there was always a kind of thing that even if it looked, you kind of get what you pay for. And there was less of it. I think the problem is now it's easy to produce stuff. Not easy to produce good stuff, but it's really easy to produce stuff. It's really easy to plagiarize. It's really easy. You might even plagiarize without knowing you're doing it. You know, and you could argue that's what I did on the street with right in front of me. But I think it's so easy. Like I said to you earlier, again, when we started, I said, you get someone saying, can you review my PDF? Now, it might be amazing. Some people say that, and I know it's going to be brilliant because they're someone that I know. But it's how do I get the time to read it to see if it's amazing? At least a book, it takes some effort for someone to send it to me and, you know, to just email someone, send me a Dropbox link. Again, I'm not complaining about that. I see why people do it and it might be incredible, but there's just so much. And I think because of that, people can go into this with naivety thinking, oh, I've got this little idea, I'm going to put it on a PDF or a download and sell it. And why not, you know? I'd love to, and there, it's a shame because it means like you miss the good stuff in the go amongst all of that. So it is, the quality is, it's gone down of everything, hasn't it? I suppose, you know, out of magic as well, people can still produce stuff really easily. And now with 3D printing, and we've had a few issues, haven't we, with 3D printed magic tricks that have come out, you know, that you kind of go, well, you know, we've got to maybe go back a step. And I suppose that's why one of the things about the review show is that at least I can highlight the stuff that I think is really good. I don't get sent, as we said, I don't really get sent stuff that, because people, I think, know their stuff isn't very good, but it isn't mostly. Except when they're just starting out, they might like have that naivety. But I think I don't get sent a lot of that stuff because I think people know that it's not that great. So I don't really see a lot of it, but I see it on, you know, with trailers and stuff like that, and I hear about it, and it there's so much.
I don't get anything. Oh my god,
no,
doing this whole thing wrong. I don't get anybody saying anything to me.
No, again, say be careful what you wish for. I don't get loads, like I say, but I do get people wanting me to review their stuff, and I do get I started getting stuff off Murphy's again, but again, I make sure it's not loads. But yeah, I mean, I kind of what I really, you know, you do that thing of highlighting the stuff that the bad stuff, which again, I do if I got it, because I think people need to know when it's a ripoff. I think if a trick isn't very good, that's fine. If Because if you can see the trick in the trailer isn't very good and it isn't for you, that's fine. It's like, it's about that deception, isn't it? That we have to let people know about. And that's the sad thing, you know, about Summit was I didn't think it was a terrible trick. And you did that thing of kind of going, there's a way of using this. It's actually all right, didn't you? Did you do a different way of using it? Yeah.
Yeah, I did it as a card and Sharpie type thing.
Yeah, and I was speaking to someone else about actually, but because of the discrepancy with the trailer, it created this whole thing, and it was. So I think that what we need is, if you're going to make something, just be as honest as you can in the trailer, and we'll make that judgment of whether we like it or not. You know,
I think the Summit point is a good thing to actually talk about, because I think that a lot of stuff is being rushed to market. Like Summit, if they sat there and thought it through, they could have come up with so many better ways to do what they did. Yeah. And you see so many tricks that come out and it's like this, and then it's this 2.0 where they've fixed
the
first one. And I think that, I don't know if it's because they're worried that somebody else will do it, so they want to get it out to market quickly, or I don't know if it's because they've had the idea and they just don't want to road test it and they just want to get it out there. But it does feel that from time to time, stuff is rushed out more than it should have been done in the old days.
Yes. I wonder as well whether, so you take Summit as an example, but there are many examples, but it is an interesting one. That you get people, you know, abstract effects is fairly new. Mm-hmm. So there is a kind of learning curve to be had. Let's empathize, you know, and look at kind of, because it's easy to kind of go, oh, Summit's awful and everybody's trying to rip everybody off. But it might have been a genuine, you know, thing. I'm being, you know, I'm just devil's advocate. So you've got a couple of things going on. You've got the fact it's a fairly new company, so it could be a learning curve. It could be the fact that, you know, it's lockdown. People are desperate. Some people are desperate, and when people are desperate, they make decisions that aren't maybe the most healthy or most rational. Could be that. Could be that they just went, no, we want to sell a load, so we're just going to save that to sell it. It could be many, many things. And I think that's something to think about as well when we do talk about why something might not live up to a standard. But, oh, man, I've done it again. What was the original? What was the original question?
We're just talking about things being rushed to market.
Yeah, sorry, the rush. Yeah, so I think there's that. And it could be that there's time constraints on them, that they give themselves a deadline, you know. But I think you're right. We need to go back to, I think, not rushing and going, right, how can I make this thing as good as possible? And when it's ready, I'll put it out there, rather than I've got to get this ready by Blackpool. You know, the classic thing is, yeah, that's a great, you know, people got their Blackpool trick and they don't work on it until 2 weeks beforehand. And you can tell it's like the trick they've got ready for Blackpool, right? And it's that's the problem, I think. And there's been numerous studies on, you know, with works of art, when people are commissioned, the works of art tend to be critiqued more negatively than when people just create a work of art, and when it's finished, they say, you know, that. And I think that's the same with a product is if you're getting it out for a date, then there's going to be issues. It's like getting an album deal, isn't it? Your first one's made because you're with your mates making an album. The second one's made because you've got to make another one by next year. So that's a big issue. And I'd love to go back to that thing of, I always quote the Vernon lecture that I remember seeing on video of him, you know, doing his stuff because that's what he was into. And then at the end going, apparently there's some stuff at the back of the room you can buy, you know. That it was about lecturing and you can buy the stuff, you know. It wasn't about you can buy a load of stuff that I'm going to lecture on. And again, I don't think there's anything wrong with that if it's decent stuff and there's something learning to be had at the same time. But
yeah, I know a lot of people, they take exception to a lecture that basically becomes a deal of them, and I do as well. I like to see a lecture where I can actually take something away from it and learn it. But I suppose what a lot of people that are watching this might not realize is doing a lecture doesn't actually make you very much money at all. You don't make much money from being, when you take into consideration the travel there and probably grabbing food on the way there and on the way back, compared to how much you get paid if you did a gig, it's not very much at all. And I think a lot of lecturers, they feel the need to have back of the room sales because they want to make it worth their while.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think people need to understand that, you know, if the back of the room sales weren't there, you probably wouldn't be getting anywhere near as many lecturers.
No way. No, I totally agree. And I think it's that fine line, isn't it, between kind of, like you said, it's not a lecture if you don't learn anything without having to buy that trick. Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, I think it's nice where at the end of it, there might be a couple of things that you can't do without buying the thing, but I've learned this thing and I learned that thing. I always think if I walk away from a lecture with one thing that I've learned, that's a good ratio, that I've kind of inspired me or something like that. But when it's, I remember, and I love, don't get me wrong, I love David Stone, but there's a couple of things I saw on his DVD, which most of the stuff I think you needed. You know, I even went on his website and nearly bought it all afterwards because it was great. You know what I mean? And then I was like, no, stop. You're reviewing a DVD. You're not buying all the stuff, you know. And it was almost like his mates had said, you know, when you do your lecture, can you do that? Can you do like Zenith? Because, you know, because I could do with shifting a few units. You know, and I'm being, you know, facetious. But it can feel like that a bit sometimes. And I love David Stone stuff. He's absolutely brilliant.
No, great. Yeah. Totally agree with you. One more question about magic before we move on. I miss the old days. And what I mean by that is I miss the days where, and it wasn't that long ago, where you had DVDs like James Brown's Fancy a Pot of Jam and Matthew Dowden's Party Animal and Pete Wardell and his Crowd Pullers DVDs and Gary Jones and Lee Smith with the Eye Candy DVDs and the list goes on and on and on. And a lot of the stuff that Russ was doing with people like Sean McCree and Daniel Chard, where you had a performer or somebody who put a DVD together with like 9 or 10 of their best routines that they've done for years. They go out into a bar or a nightclub, they perform the whole thing for you. You see real reactions, and then it comes back into a studio, and they break all that down. That doesn't happen these days. Now it's all single-trick DVDs. When was the last time you remember a project coming out, whether it be download or download or a DVD? Because it's so rare these days. It's all either single-trick downloads or single-trick products. You don't see those sort of compilations.
No, and there's, I mean, the last one, I mean, I love, do you know what I really, really love? You know, Louis de Matos does the MC DVD, you know, the ones, like the Paul Daniels one, and the 5 discs, like 8 hours of pretty much their entire, the David Williams one, their entire career. Yeah. So they're still coming out. But I remember being at Blackpool and he had his stand there. And I was watching the Leonard Green one recently, and it's like 5 discs of all of Leonard Green, everything, you know, all that stuff. And if DVDs are £100 or $100 or whatever, and you've got a career in each one of those things. I mean, you learn, there's so much learning. I mean, it's just offensive how much you learn from one of those DVDs. I mean, Paul Daniels just talking about, you know, his electric chairs and his chop cup and being interviewed and, you know, hours and hours and hours of stuff. And there's no hardly anybody on their stand, but then you've got a stand down there with which has got a few of the newest tricks on that people, they're fine, they're good tricks, but they're not career builders, you know, absolutely swamped, you know, and that says a lot about the kind of what it's, that instant fix. It's a little bit like, I remember my mate took a photo once on, he was at a service station and he stood back and he took a photo and it was like one of the really healthy restaurants here that did like takeaway curries and stuff, you know, in the service station. And here was a McDonald's and there was about 300 people queued at the McDonald's and like nobody at this healthy food thing. And it's that sort of thing of, there's this weird disjoint. I think part of the problem is even when they do come out, the problem with downloads, there's a psychological thing, and it may only be because of my age, is that when you download something, you can't see it. It's a file on your computer. When you buy something, every time you see it, it reminds you of that thing. And you, for me, it's like when you, it's out of sight, out of mind, all right? It's like if you want to give up chocolate, don't have chocolate out. You know, if you see it, that's what starts the thing. And it happens in a healthy way as well. If you see a DVD on your shelf, you go, oh, I'll put that on. And there's something about that ritual for me that reminds me and makes me hungry for learning. It's like a book. You know, I look at those books and I go, I really, by looking at them, it makes me want to get in and learn. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the big problems with it. Again, it's become too easy. Make a trick. And don't get me wrong, it's cheaper. You know, £6, you can get a decent trick and learn a move. And sometimes that's brilliant. You know, like I said about bubble thought earlier, it's a great trick. You know, it's going to take a bit of work. It's not going to cost you the world. But I always talk about the Bill Malone L&L DVDs. Those first 4 Bill Malone DVDs, have got your entire career on them if you want it. You know, Slidini Silks, Built a Lemon. You know, that's where I learned Maxi Twist. All the card stuff's completely commercial. It's just all on there. And they're absolutely brilliant.
They really
are. Loads of people don't know about them, you know.
Oh, because when people come into Magic these days, they look for the shiny new thing that's come out that's the best trick ever. And a lot of people that are in Magic will never see Bill Malone, never see Doc Eason, never see Daryl, Michael Amar, the greats from yesteryear that I learned from and you learned from.
Yeah. And I think it's sorry, Craig. I got him. I think it's important to kind of, it's a bit like music, isn't it? I find it hard to find new music now, but it's definitely there. But there's so much now because it's so easy to, and that's part of it. I think there is still amazing stuff coming out, which is, you know, you look at people like Woody Aragon and people like that still, who are influenced heavily by Tamaritz and Danny D'Ortiz, you know, which again has the Louis de Matos did the DVDs on his stuff, two sets. And so they're still there, but we have to work harder to separate them from the barrage of stuff that we're getting. And I think certain companies are being a bit careful of not just churning everything out and kind of going, okay, are we into this? And those reputable companies are, you know, the Alexam, Vanishing Ink, Prop Dog, you know, I'll kind of trust, when they recommend something, I'll trust it, that it's not just because they're selling it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fantastic. Well, your review show is amazing. And
thank you.
I'm sure anyone that's watching this has seen your review show. And if you haven't, subscription link down below. Go and subscribe.
Thank you.
It's incredible. Although I try not, and I mentioned this to you before, actually, one more thing. I try not to watch your reviews. I don't know if you do the same.
Yeah, I totally do.
Yeah, because I never
watch my reviews.
Oh my God, I'm a big fan of your channel. I watch your stuff afterwards, but if I know I'm going to be reviewing a product, I don't want to get influenced by somebody else's.
No.
So I'll watch it myself. I'll do the review, and then I'll go, right, let's go and look and see what Steve said. Let's go and see what David said, you know. But I think that you have to do that. You know, I think that's kind of really important. Else you end up just going, actually, that's a good point. And you end up doing the same review.
Well, of course, because you, once you hear it, you can't unhear it, can you? And if it's a really good point, you go, well, I hadn't thought of that. And that's it becomes a minefield. So, no, I'm with you. I think David does the same, because I think he mentioned on one of the forums, I haven't watched your review of Summit yet because I haven't reviewed it. And I was like, oh, no, I thought you had. I hadn't watched it, but I'd mentioned that you had in my review. And so, I'm not watching anybody else review until I've gotten it, because it's... I'm way too easily influenced.
Absolutely.
As people will tell you.
Well, I want to ask you two more questions before we wrap this up. And the first question is, and I alluded to this at the very, very beginning. One thing that you've done throughout the whole of lockdown is you've put regular videos out about helping people's mindsets, helping people's kind of mental health, so to speak.
Yeah.
Getting through lockdown, because a lot of magicians have struggled. A lot of magicians have struggled, not just magicians, everybody in every industry, but specifically, you know, to be a magician, you've got to have a certain amount of ego, and you normally feed off that live audience, and to have that literally taken away overnight. And yeah, you've got the virtual thing, but it's not the same thing. And I've seen so many amazing magicians who have dropped out of magic and they're never going to come back. They've said, no, I'm done. I've sold all my stuff and I'm never going to come back. And I've seen other magicians that have had their interest completely wane. I said at the beginning that, and I said off camera to you, your videos have been incredible. I've watched a lot of them, not all of them, but I've watched a lot of them. But I also shared them with my wife right at the beginning of lockdown. At lockdown number one, when the whole thing kicked off, she was really struggling. And it really helped her watching some of the stuff that you were saying. So at the time of filming, we're now hopefully coming out of lockdown. Everything seems to be opening up. It all seems to be heading in the right direction. Have you got any advice for magicians that are watching this that have struggled and are continuing to struggle in terms of, because you know, your words have helped me, if we can kind of, any advice, that would be amazing.
Yeah, for me, it's awareness of what you're struggling with. And I think that, you know, you kind of mentioned it then. It's like all of a sudden we didn't have audiences. And for me, it was really looking deeply into what magic and what those audiences give to me, because we've got to work back from it. We've got to kind of go, okay, I love magic, but what does it give to me? And usually it boils down to things like connection, belonging, you know, it's what... And it's finding ways of finding those things when those things are taken away from us. And actually what it comes down to is that, you know, it's not like we just need magic. We need other things to connect. And that was part of those videos for me, was it wasn't a marketing thing. It was definitely a thing of connecting with people every day. And I'd lost my connection because I realized how much I was getting, you know, I'm quite introverted, so I don't get out loads. I don't go out loads. And I spend a lot of time on my own free choice because that's kind of what I do. But it doesn't mean I don't need that connection. It doesn't mean I still don't need to see people. And when that was taken away from me, I realized what doing gigs was giving to me, and it was giving to me connection. You know, it was, you know, as I said before, and I'm not saying poor me, I love my life and I'm very happy. But, you know, when you do have, in the last few years, my social life has been limited, that connection becomes really important. And I think it's looking back and going, you know, it's not just you love magic or you love performing, but what does it give to you? And we've got to boil things down to what they give to us. And then when those things aren't available, we then have to, it's almost like you feel like you're disloyal by finding them somewhere else. You know, do you know what I mean? It's like, I can't do magic. But, you know, get your joy, as we said, from practicing, you know, reconnect with why you got into it again, and understand that actually it's like when you lose, you know, when you lose a partner, and when you separate, you think that that person is the person that made you happy, but people don't make you happy. Your happiness comes from what you do and who you are, and the connection with people. Not you, if you put all your happiness into one person. And it's the same with magic and performing. You can't just rely on performing for your happiness, because it might not be there forever for various reasons. You know, you might get sick, you have to give up. You know, I always said, with sleight of hand, what if I broke my fingers or if I lost a finger? So you make sure you have things there that are going to fulfill that. And I think for a lot of people, for me, it was a big wake up call and going, whoa, I have to really go within myself now and really try and understand myself and what I need to create contentment in my life. And I think we love magic, but we can still get that connection in other ways. And don't, change is very difficult for people. And when people say, I'm not going to do Zoom magic shows, like me, that was based on fear, because I didn't know if I could do them, really, so if I'm being totally honest. So I tried them and they actually did give me some sort of connection. So it's finding, it's experimenting, not being scared of failing, and understanding that you can get these things from different sources if you just have an open mind and start exploring things and try and get the ego out of it.
Amazing advice. Really good advice, Steve. Let me ask you one last question. Final question. What's next? This is a question I ask everybody I interview on this channel. And it's an interesting question, because you have achieved so much. You've had a career as a performer your entire life, one way or another. You've always been at a very high level, especially in the last few years. You've got a very successful YouTube channel. You've got a very successful card course. I know that you do stuff away from that as well. And you're so busy. You have so, like I said at the beginning, you have so many strings to your bow. You've accomplished so much. Is there anything left on your magical bucket list that you haven't actually kind of ticked off yet that you'd like to do? What are your plans moving forward?
So the big thing I'm working on now, which is probably a lifetime thing, is to try and tie up, you know, I talked about that closure earlier. There's lots of things I started learning in my life that I never really got to the point I wanted to. So I'm tying up things now. So rather than learning, and don't get me wrong, I'd always learn new slides and stuff, but rather than learning new things, so I'm on a mission at the moment to all the things I started learning, and there are about 5 or 6 things that I started, never got to do, I'm doing, and almost to an obsessive way. So every evening I juggle 5 balls, because my 5 ball juggling I used to perform it, but badly, and it never got to where I wanted it to go. I practice a trick called the head roll, because it's the one trick that I do half of in my show. It's where you have a ball balanced on your head and you go like that and it ends up there. And then I get to the back and then flip it up and carry on juggling, but I never got the right hand side and it always niggled me. You know, acrylic balls, contact juggling. I always wanted to do 4 in one hand and do more smooth stuff. And that always got to a point. I performed it. It wasn't great. So I'm going back. And my point is, by the time I'm 50, I want those things to be there, because they're bugging me. And that's part of my show that I'm writing at the moment. September 2nd, I'm doing a show which is about that thing of, you know. But also, it's about doing them for me. And I think so what's next is really sort of going back into all those things that I do, make sure I'm doing them for the right reasons, making sure I don't burn out. So, you know, rather than trying to do five reviews a week, it's going back to going, like, it's okay just to do one or two. And part of me doing loads and loads is about, I want people to think it's great. And I want people, and it's going, you know what? Do what you do. And if people like it, they'll like it. And if they don't, they don't. And you'll find your audience. And I think it's reconnecting with that why of going, let's do this for a really good reason and something that you can sustain, which is, again, goes back to values. So I think it's doing what I do at a manageable level and one day making some money doing it, which would be handy. So visit cardmagiccourse.com.
Yeah, well, cardmagiccourse.com, it's going to be down below. You're going to start lecturing more as well. So
yeah, I love lecturing.
So can people book you for a lecture? Like live?
Totally. Totally. And I won't do what I did the other day. I was in the middle of a lecture and I realized at the end I was running out of time. And I've teaching the cups and balls. And it, you know, when you panic and go, oh God, I've run over. And I was halfway through and I just totally forgot where I was, but I did apologize to them. But the rest of the lecture was all right, I think. But yeah, I'm really into lecturing. I think it's lovely.
Yeah. Fantastic. And again, would people contact you? How can people connect with you? Obviously, I'm going to put links down below for thecardmagiccourse.com and also for Real Magic Reviews. Is there any other way that people can connect on you? Instagram or...
I use Instagram a bit. So email for, obviously, for the bookings and stuff, email just steve@stevefaulkner.com. Or the card, you can email me through... that's the email. And you can message me on Insta and stuff like that. I just try and not to, again, like a lot of people at points through lockdown, I got a little bit kind of on the socials a bit much. I don't mean doing the videos, but constantly checking messages and stuff. So I try and limit that to once or twice a day now. So, but yeah, just the usual channels. The Instagram is Real Magic Review. And there's also at Steve Faulkner, if it's the sort of more the non-magic stuff. And Facebook pages, I don't use that much. I've got them, but I think it's, yeah, through the channel and all through emails, best way.
Amazing. Steve, this has been an incredible interview. I've been wanting to get you on the channel for a long time. Like I said, you're one of the busiest people in magic. So thanks for finding time to come and jump in. I really appreciate it. You're amazing.
Oh, thanks. So I feel flattered to be asked, Craig. So thank you very much. And good on stuff you're doing is great. So thank you.
Oh, cheers, mate. That means a lot. It really does. Guys, make sure you leave a message down below for Steve. Leave a comment, because I'm sure he'll read it. Also, please, 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 if you're watching this and you're not already subscribed to Steve's channel, it's Real Magic Review. Check that out. And also, £10 a month is one of the best deals in magic. If you want to learn card magic and even non-card magic, go check that out as well, cardmagiccourse.com. Other than that, Steve, thank you so much. You are amazing.
Thank you, mate.
Guys, I'll see you again tomorrow. My name's Craig from Magic TV.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic, magic.
Be
magic.
Sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.